From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is Away to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
Any gardener shopping at a local nursery or paging through perennial plant catalogs can't help but notice there are a lot of echinacea or coneflowers on the market, more every year, including in unexpected colors and some with extra showy double flowers. But how good are all these new cultivars as garden plants? And maybe more important, how good are they at supporting pollinators? The native plant experts at Mount Cuba Center in Delaware have just released the results of a multi-year trial of echinacea, and their insights are our topic today. But first, these messages.
Programming and underwriting support from Garden Tool Company. Garden Tool Company's wide selection of heirloom quality tools for your gardening passion is backed by outstanding customer service, fast shipping, and ongoing support. GardenToolCompany.com. Programming and underwriting support from Brushwood Nursery. For more than 20 years, Brushwood Nursery has shipped the finest selection of clematis and other vines all over the United States with full gallon-sized plant and free shipping. Their website is full of beautiful pictures and information on growing clematis. BrushwoodNursery.com.
Today's guest, Sam Hoadley, is Manager of Horticultural Research at Mount Cuba Center in Delaware, a longtime native plant garden and research site where he just completed his report on a trial of 75 different echinacea. Before joining Mount Cuba, Sam was lead horticulturist for Longwood Gardens Hillside Garden, and he received his degree in sustainable landscape horticulture from University of Vermont. Hi, Sam. Thank you for making time.
Hi, Margaret. Thanks for having me.
Yes. And lucky you to have one of the great jobs in horticulture, I think.
Yes. No, I feel very lucky. And as we both know, George did a pretty fantastic job putting this program on the map. And, you know, my turn to carry the torch, and it's very exciting to be stepping into this role.
Yes. Well, I love the Mount Cuba trials, and I love Mount Cuba. I first visited there when it was founded, really, as a native plant center for the first time that I came. So, I mean, wow, what a place. So this is not the first time that Mount Cuba has looked at echinacea, is it, the coneflowers, or trialed them? So tell us sort of the scope then and now of what's been done.
Sure. So the echinacea trial, or at least our first one, was one of the first times we really trialed plants or a whole genus formally. There were two early trials. There was aster and echinacea. That first trial took place from 2007 to 2009. And I think it incorporated about 48 different species and cultivars that were available on the market at that time. In those two initial trials, we really looked at horticultural values only. We weren't looking at the ecological aspects of the plants as much as we have in our recent trials. So it's been about a decade or a little bit more so since that initial echinacea trial, and a lot more echinacea have been on the market. So it's almost not that the initial trial was irrelevant as soon as it came out, but a lot of those plants aren't available anymore, and there's been a lot more plants introduced since then. So we felt right. It was a good idea to revisit echinacea as a trial, include some of those newer introductions, and also include a pollinator aspect to our report.
Yeah. Well, so probably the most common echinacea is Echinacea purpurea, the purple coneflower. And, you know,
yep.
I read in your report that the word for echinacea comes from the Greek word for hedgehog.
Yes, hedgehog and or sea urchin, yeah. Which I think is a perfect name. It makes a lot of sense. I mean, looking at the cone in the coneflower.
Yeah. So it may be one of the country's most recognizable native wildflowers, you know, wherever anyone lives. But it's not a widespread native, I don't think. Like, it's not native in the Northeast where I live, or in New England. I don't know if it's native in Delaware, but I was looking at range maps of Echinacea purpurea. I think there's a University of Kansas scientist, Kelly Kinscher. I'm not sure how to pronounce his name. And he has incredible range maps of all the species of Echinacea and other natives. And it's not like it's across the whole country, is it?
Right. The bulk of Echinacea are really kind of centralized in the central United States, down through the Gulf Coast states and into the southeastern United States. There was one species occurred fairly locally, but unfortunately that was only a historic occurrence. Echinacea levigata was actually observed in parts of Pennsylvania before it was extirpated from the state. But yeah, mm-hmm. They're fairly widespread. Different species are obviously more localized than others, but many of them do really beautifully outside of their natural ranges into gardens in the Northeast.
Yes.
And in the Mid-Atlantic.
And then I think the interest of them is like in herbalism and other things have brought them into gardens and in some places they've naturalized and so on and so forth. But just to point
Absolutely.
Out, it's not like from coast to coast. This is a Native American plant, literally. I mean, it's
right.
Yeah, it does well in a lot of areas, though. And it's kind of become known as a very recognizable wildflower. So not content to leave well enough alone, commercial nursery breeding
right.
programs have kept introducing more and more and more and more so-called purple coneflower, as in Echinacea purpurea. But, oh my goodness, like they're not even purple anymore. And the centers keep looking to me. We just said sea urchins or whatever, but they look like someone glued
yes.
a cheerleader's pom-pom to the middle of the thing.
Exactly.
You know, it's a mess.
Yep. Yes.
So tell us
yeah.
a little bit about that.
Sure. There's, you know, I mean, I think since the 90s, there's been a lot of breeding going on with Echinacea, and that really kind of started. One of the major pioneers of that effort was Dr. Jim Ault at Chicago Botanic Garden, as well as other nurseries around the eastern United States. But they really started to play with crossing two or more species of Echinacea. There are 9 species total.
Uh-huh.
And one species in particular really started to allow breeders to bring in these novel colors, like the reds and the oranges, and that was Echinacea paradoxa. It's the only species of Echinacea that's naturally occurring outside of the, you know, pink to purple spectrum. It's actually a pure yellow flower. So those genetics allowed for these kind of newer colors to start being introduced. And then, you know, double flower forms were, I believe, first found in Europe. And now they're, I think, one of the first ones was a pink-flowered form. And then there's been a proliferation of those as well. There's reds and oranges and yellows and whites. So there's a lot of these double or pom-pom flowers out there as well. And there just seems to be new colors and new breeding breakthroughs all the time, which has resulted in a tremendous amount of new cultivars that have been introduced.
Right. So you evaluate at Mount Cuba in the trial gardens over several years each genus that you do. You evaluate in a couple of primary ways, performance as a garden plant. I'm doing this very loosely, I suppose, performance as a
Sure.
garden plant, but also in recent years, as you said earlier, appeal to insects. And I loved the line in your report that explains that none of these man-made double flowers won the insects' approval. Did they?
No, they certainly didn't. No.
And that's
yeah.
the case really with everything we've gone and doubled, isn't it? I mean, it doesn't have the nectar and pollen resources that the single flowers of nature have.
I think that is generally the trend. Oftentimes when there is this mutation, and there are several different mutations that can result in double flowers, but often they're replacing a reproductive structure in the flower with a structure that's more similar to a petal. So that would generally mean that you're losing some of that benefit that pollinators are looking for in that reproductive structure.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's generally thought, you know, we kind of thought that's what we're going to see, is that we're not going to see that many pollinators being attracted to double flowers as compared to the more wild type Echinacea purpurea and related cultivars. And that's exactly what our data supported. There were far fewer visitations to double flowered cultivars or pom-pom cultivars than there were to some of the other closer to wild type cultivars that we had in the trial.
So now, who figures that out? Do you have like cameras set up, like field camera, you know, wildlife cameras, or is someone standing there? Or how does that work? How do you get that data?
It's we have this wonderful team here. It's a volunteer group of citizen scientists called the Pollinator Watch Team. I think it's roughly 20, maybe a few more volunteers who sign up on a daily basis when the trial is in bloom. And they're basically observing these plants and doing simple counts of the amount of pollinators that are coming to these individual cultivars.
Oh.
They'll watch a single plant for 60 seconds and then move on to the next plant and essentially tally the visitations that they're seeing. In different trials, we've done this treatment for a few different trials. For echinacea, we were looking specifically at bees and wasps, and we were also doing a separate count for butterflies. So really what this data has allowed us to see is how many insects are visiting these plants. We're not really looking at, we're not going farther into, you know, pollen nutrition or nectar volume or anything like that. It's simply how attractive these plants are to pollinators.
Okay. It's, you know, if people want to just even do this in their own yard, I mean, literally, and it doesn't even have to be a native plant. If you have, for instance, you know, the panicle hydrangeas, hydrangea paniculata, if you have a big puffy double one with all the sterile florets, you know, like PG, right? The paniculata grandiflora.
Sure.
And then across the yard, you have one of the more lace cappy ones. Again, same species of plant that those derive from, right? Straight.
Yep.
But you go and stand on a July or August day or whatever, you go stand next to one for 5 minutes and then next to the other for 5 minutes. I mean, you don't even have to open your eyes. You can just hear the buzzing at the one and not the other. Do you know what
exactly.
I mean? Because the insects know where they're going to get the resources, right?
Exactly. Yep.
Yeah.
And that's our thought, is that their insects aren't going to waste their time going to a plant that's not going to give them benefits
right.
in general.
Yeah. Do the doubles even set seed? I mean, because we're talking about pollinators, but boy, oh boy, goldfinches love seed-producing perennials like that as well. Yeah?
Absolutely. The trial garden was an absolute hotspot for goldfinches. In late summer and fall, when all the coneflowers were setting seed, every morning it was just flooded with goldfinches. It was absolutely magical. But the goldfinches, we didn't collect formal data on them and what plants they were preferring, but it was very clear to us, just anecdotally, that they were going to the plants that had single flowers that had seeds that were very readily accessible.
Right.
It's unclear. We did dissect some flowers, especially the double flowers, to look for viable seeds. We didn't find many, if any at all, but that doesn't mean that it's impossible. It is possible, I suppose, to have a very light seed set or a few seeds, but more often than not, you're seeing the best seed set on the more wild-type single cultivars.
Right. So if you want a lot of pollinators and you want a lot of goldfinches, you probably want to stick with the single flowers.
Exactly.
And the winners are, I mean, did any of the odd-colored ones even, were there any of those even in the top? You know, you said bringing in the genetics from another species altogether to get those sort of orangey and gold and red colors and so forth. But did any of those even place highly? And tell us a little bit about some of the performance and what was kind of, quote, the winners.
Sure. So some of the ones that had somewhat unusual colors into more of the red end of the spectrum did make it in. Echinacea Santa Fe, Echinacea Postman, and Kismet Intense Orange all made the list.
Mm-hmm.
I think actually Sombrero Hot Coral was in there as well. So some of those really were great plants, and it kind of shows how far breeding has progressed. I think some of the early initial cultivars that were the first breakthroughs into the color spectrum may not have been as reliably excellent garden plants. But, you know, Santa Fe and Postman have proven that how far this breeding has come to make these plants horticulturally superior. I think on some of my favorites, and really the one that I think is the biggest take-home message here, or one of the biggest take-home messages, was our absolute top performer, which is Echinacea purpurea picabella. What's really special about this plant is that it was also the top performer in our first trial, so it really stood the test of time.
Oh.
It's very similar to the species Echinacea purpurea. It's a little bit more compact. The flowers have a slightly different shape. The petals are a little bit more pointed and a little more outwardly held. But it's a really stunning plant, extremely consistent, and, I mean, it has, again, stood the test of time. So that was one of my favorites. We knew early on this was going to be a great plant, just seeing it in the trial garden and how well it was performing.
Hmm. You know, in the early years that this proliferation began, you know, they caught my eye at the garden center when they first started appearing and in catalogs, just like everybody else's, because they were so different. And I tried
sure.
a few, and I was so turned off because they didn't even come back the next year in most cases. Do you know what I mean? They were they were pushed too quickly to market some of the varieties. It sounds like there are some sturdier ones even in the different colors now.
Yes, that's really what I think what we're seeing, and I think breeders have put a lot of effort into making these plants longer live, because I think that has been one of the biggest complaints, is that there's kind of a lack of longevity for some of these cultivars in the garden.
Mm. Okay. So Pica Bella was the top performer, and so many years later, a repeat performer, so that's great.
Yep.
And any others that... like, which one that was the most sort of different was a peak performer, and how was it different? Do you know what I mean? Which one that had been human influence that looked the most different?
Sure. I think Echinacea snowcone really fits that bill.
Okay.
It's a really, really compact plant. This is actually an introduction by Brent Horvath and Intrinsic Perennials in Hebron, Illinois. It's a really compact plant. It's only about 2.5 feet tall and wide, and it just makes these absolutely perfect mounds. And the foliage, when it's in full bloom in June and July, those green mounds are completely obscured by white flowers. It almost gives the impression of... It doesn't say to scream to me Echinacea. It almost looks like a mum or something like that. It's almost too perfect.
Right.
So it may not fit into a more naturalistic design, but for a container garden or for the front of a more formal border, something like that, this would be a great plant. And this is one that has a somewhat unknown but complex hybrid parentage. I believe Echinacea tennesseense is in this hybrid.
So one of the ones, speaking of other species, there's Echinacea pallida, I think.
Yep.
And it's different looking both in shape and in color. It's kind of paler. What about that? You included some of these other species in your trials, I think, as well, didn't you?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. We included five species that are fairly available in the marketplace. Some of them you have to look for a little bit, but they are commercially available. There are an additional four species that we did not include in the trial that aren't generally found frequently in the market, and one of them is actually federally endangered. That's Echinacea levigata. So propagation and distribution of that plant is pretty limited and not as accessible in gardens. But, we included Echinacea angustifolia, Echinacea pallida, Echinacea paradoxa, which was the yellow flowering species, Echinacea purpurea, which a lot of our cultivars and a lot of the top performers are derived from, and then Echinacea tennesseensis, which is a really cool species. I think there's been a lot of breeding done with that species as well, incorporating that into hybrids. This is actually an endangered plant, and recently in 2011, it was actually delisted thanks to some really good, successful conservation efforts in its native habitats in Tennessee.
Oh, yeah. So there were quite a number of other species evaluated. That's great. I think you said that bees and wasps were popular visitors. Is that correct?
Yes, we actually found that bees and wasps were... the most frequent visitors. I think a lot of times we associate, at least I associate Echinacea with butterflies, because they always seem to be there. But as far as the percentage of visitors, I think butterflies were only about 5% of the total visitations. That varied a little bit between cultivars. For example, Echinacea purpurea, fragrant angel, which was actually the best plant for attracting pollinators in our trial, had something like 14% butterflies, which actually propelled it to the top of the list. But most of the other cultivars, it was a very, very small percentage of their total visitation.
Okay, but bees and wasps seem to really be taken with these plants, yeah.
Absolutely,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So I don't know if there's any other ones you want to shout out quickly, and then I just wanted to ask you kind of what you're on to next, because I know you're always on to something else.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But I, maybe there's some other points that we haven't made about these plants, or maybe you have suggestions of how to utilize them, or, I don't know, whatever you want to kind of throw out there, and then we'll move on to some what's going on next.
Sure. I mentioned briefly Echinacea purpurea, fragrant angel, and this was actually another plant that did beautifully in the first trial. It was our best white-flowered cultivar again, and it was really, really great and popular with pollinators. Two cultivars that I really, really loved were Echinacea Sensation Pink and Echinacea Glowing Dream. They're very similar plants. They have this really kind of intense glowing pink coral color. And Glowing Dream has some really like stunning dark stems, which is pretty unique, was pretty unique in our trial. That color is just so saturated and so different, but they're extremely eye-catching. As far as use in the garden, there's echinacea here for everybody. I tend to lean more on the species end of things and cultivars that resemble species a little bit more in my home garden. But there's such a variety here. There really is an echinacea for everybody. I think the biggest take-home message for gardening with them is just make sure you have really well-drained soils, and full sun is best. So that's 6 or more hours of full sun a day is really ideal. Although some of the species like Echinacea purpurea and I think Echinacea levigata can take a little bit more shade, but you'll get your best flowering in full sun.
Okay. So in the last few minutes, you dug them all out and what the heck went in? I mean, how many things are you doing and what's next kind of on the trial? I think I read that you're studying all the sedges, the carex. Is that one thing that you're doing somewhere?
Yes, that's coming up. Actually, so next year you can expect a report on smooth hydrangea, so hydrangea arborescens. And we're looking at the exact same thing you were talking about with hydrangea paniculata. We're looking at the pollinator profiles of those as well. And we're finding exactly what you're saying, is that these double or these big mop head flowers are very different from lace cap flowers as far as their ability to attract pollinators. Carex is coming up after that. We have Vernonia in the trial garden, so ironweeds.
Ironweeds are so great.
Yeah, I'm really excited about them. Definitely kind of unsung heroes of the fall garden. And speaking of fall gardens, we also just planted as a replacement for the echinacea our Solidago trial, which I'm also looking forward to quite a lot.
So the goldenrods, you know, it's funny, Sam, I had a naturalist here. I've said this on the program before once or twice over the years, but maybe 3-4 years ago we did a workshop and I have like a little meadow above my house and I'm complaining to the workshop students. I'm saying, oh, well, you know, I'm really concerned because I have this Canada goldenrod and, you know, it's going to take over my whole little meadow and oh no. And one species, and in other words, and the naturalist, the scientist I was working with, she walked into the little meadow while I was blathering to the students. And she came back with 5 stems of 5 different plants. She laid them down on the grass and she said, well, actually, Margaret, she was very polite. Actually, Margaret, you have 5 species of Solidago, but you don't have the Canada goldenrod.
Very good.
Oops,
there's Margaret. A ton of them, and they're not very well known. We have many species that I think will be trialed on a horticultural level for the first time in our trials here.
Oh, they're such productive plants, and both in flower and then in seed as well. I mean, a lot of, there's a lot going on. They provide a lot of life in the habitat and in the ecosystem. So, that's great.
Absolutely.
That's very exciting.
Yes.
So, and so are you kind of getting ready for spring? Are you still, do you have snow or what's the situation there right now as we get halfway through February or so to the second half of February?
Yeah, we're starting to gear up. We're kind of doing a lot of prep work to start data collection. We're going to start really collecting data in April on the Carex trial, and then most of the other trials, the Vernonia, Solidago, and Hydrangea, will really start in May. But as soon as we do have a little bit of snow on the ground, I think a little bit more is coming tomorrow. But we'll be out in the gardens getting things prepped and cleaned up and ready for visitors when we open in April. I'm excited for spring.
Yeah, I think we're all a little cabin fever-ish at the moment, especially after this crazy last year. Well, Sam Hoadley, from the Trial Gardens at Mount Cuba Center in Delaware, I'm so glad to finally make your acquaintance, at least out loud, and I hope you're going to keep me posted about what's up, and especially with those carex. I mean, I can't wait to hear about them, so please holler anytime, okay?
Absolutely.
All right. Talk to you again soon.
All right. Thanks for having me, Margaret.
Programming and underwriting support from Brushwood Nursery. For more than 20 years, Brushwood Nursery has shipped the finest selection of clematis and other vines all over the United States with full gallon-sized plant and free shipping. Their website is full of beautiful pictures and information on growing clematis. BrushwoodNursery.com. Programming and underwriting support from Garden Tool Company. Garden Tool Company's wide selection of heirloom quality tools for your gardening passion is backed by outstanding customer service, fast shipping, and ongoing support. GardenToolCompany.com.
And I'll talk to all the rest of you again soon, I hope, too. Now, don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version of the show on Stitcher or iTunes or Spotify. And you can find me anytime at awaytogarden.com and on Facebook and on Instagram as @awaytogarden. And happy gardening meantime.
A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.